Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. New Year's Day brings a new year, but also the start of a new era for the Columbus Museum of Art. Being unveiled that day is the renovated Elizabeth M. and Richard M. Ross Building and the newly created Center for Creativity. Joining All Sides to discuss those changes are three representatives of the museum. Of course, Executive Director Nanette Macy-Junes. Welcome back, Nanette.
Hey, Ann. It's good to be here.
And Dominique Vasseur, who is Curator of European Art. Welcome to the show, Dominique.
Thank you, Ann.
And also Cindy Myers Foley, who is the Director of Education at the museum. Welcome, Cindy.
Thank you, Ann.
I guess let's get right to it and talk about what are these changes. And one of the questions I have is, what is a center for creativity?
Well, I'm gonna immediately pass the ball to Center for Creativity to Cindy,
okay,
because this is really her brainchild.
Okay.
Well, I'm thrilled you ask, and it was funny when we were going through the impetus, the exciting stage of deciding what we should do in our new renovated spaces. Nanette asked me to say what's the power. What's the important thing that happens in the museum? What makes us special and unique as far as education? Mm-hmm. And I remember she asked me to write a one-page essay on that about 3 hours before I left for vacation.
Good question.
So on the way to Massachusetts, I'm driving and I'm thinking, what is it that we do well and what is it that we believe in? What's our belief? And it really came down to the core of what we believe is that we can foster creativity, that we highlight and champion creative thinking, and the goal of what we hope to promote in our community is creativity.
In other words, it's not a passive,
no,
a passive experience.
Absolutely. And so that just rolled into lots and lots of discussions about, well, what does that mean in a society, in a community? And I think the more we talked, the more we realized, well, let's make this into a center that not only speaks to the collection, but also speaks to what our community needs from us. And we went from there. Nanette, is that
so? What are you going to do there? I know I used to take art classes at the Museum of Art in Toledo. They used to have that kind of a thing. Is this what you're talking about, that sort of thing?
Yeah, but I think even more broad-ranging than that. So it's workshops with, our community, bringing in people like Artie Isaacs and having things for businesses, or robotics workshops, but also a lot of professional development with schools around this idea of how do we think more imaginatively and creatively, spaces to highlight schools that are doing creative curriculum, which, you know, we need to highlight those folks that are out there doing that. So,
and that said, if you just come to the museum, if you're just a visitor, how will you experience a Center for Creativity?
Well, the queen place that you want to go is the Wonder Room. And that's a space that really, I think, allows families to engage in an imaginative, wondrous experience.
Like, what sort of stuff will they do there?
Well, we were all sitting around a table and someone said, what's the one thing we all did as children that really evokes wonder? And it was the fort, right? We all sat and made forts. And if you didn't get it quite right, the blanket would fall in on you and you'd have to run out and put the book on the outside. And if you weren't careful, the book would come.
And then the dog would come over and knock the whole thing down.
Exactly. And it's being inside of it and the wondrous imaginative. But you also are learning about gravity and physics as you make these, you know, things. And we said, well, let's get a contemporary artist to, you know, create a space like that, that then our visitors can manipulate. But it'll take the whole family, you know. There are things that are high, there are things that are low, blankets that can go all over. But this idea that sometimes the most wonderful creativity actually happens in the home. So being very reflective about it doesn't just happen at an art museum. It happens in our everyday lives.
Yeah, the center of the Wonder Room, there's this giant, flat screen television where you, a flat screen unit where
screen.
You see, we actually spent a year, we have a one of our educators, Jeff Sims, literally filmed families for an entire year doing creative things. And one of the really amazing things is that there's nothing in this video. Nobody runs out and buys expensive stuff. It's all about the stuff we all did as families. It's, you know, making snowmen, building a snow fort. It's there's a great summer activity where they're nailing things together to build a crazy little place to get in, you know, crazy little the treehouse. And then there's this one where they build race cars and all the stuff. The whole point is that creativity isn't other. It's not something that artists do that's over mm-hmm. here. It's something we all engage in, and that it's critical to our society, to our culture. It's where all the new ideas, the thinking out of the box ideas come from, is our wellspring of creativity as human beings. So that's what this center's about. And instead of preaching at you, we let you get down and get involved, and then we hope you kind of learn that as you're going.
My guests, Nanette Macy June, she's executive director of the Columbus Museum of Art, and with her, curator Dominique Vestour and director of education, Cindy Myers Foley. We're talking about the new renovations there and what's to come in 2011, 12, and 13. Kind of mm-hmm. exciting stuff there. Give us a call if you have a question about the Columbus Museum of Art. You'll get the answers here. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, the sort of things you're talking about, Nanette, are not what I remember growing up. I do remember the experience of it. I liked looking at art. Yeah. I liked looking at it a lot. And so this has to be part of a larger sort of a trend out there. Is this something that's been a larger change in the art museum community?
Well, it's a larger change in museums. Art museums are the last ones to sort of change. And I'm very proud to tell you that we're sort of at the forefront of that change. Is how do you, the museum cares for an extraordinary treasure, which is its collection. And I always compare us to the library. I mean, the truth is very few of us will ever own all of those books, all of those great resources. The same way, I mean, I don't know about you, Anne, but I don't have a Monet at home or a Picasso at home or all those wonderful things that are at the museum, but together we own them. So there's this great treasure that we hold for the community and trust and that we pass down generationally. Well, that's all good to say, but we only take care of things as a culture and as a community that have meaning to us. So how do you create meaning for people with the art in the collection? How do you get people engaged in a conversation with that collection? How do we make it meaningful to your life? So that's really the journey we've been on for several years in changing the way you interact with the collection. And when you come down, you're going to see there's some definite changes.
Did anything get taken away from anything in the museum? Is there anything gone that people will notice? Maybe they may not miss it, but they'll notice it's gone. Maybe they'll miss it. Who knows?
I don't know, Dominique. Sure, you're a curator. Oh. Yeah. Probably people don't even really know what curators do. I think that's...
Okay.
I mean, maybe Dominique tells you what he does, because I think most people get what Cindy does, and people probably get that I have to raise money and pay the bills. but I think curators are sort of mysterious characters.
Yeah, curators are sort of the zookeepers of our zoo, of all of our art animals. Well, I don't know. I think one of the galleries in the museum that people really loved, just because of the sheer kind of over-the-top aspect, was the Old Master Gallery, Gallery 10. It was painted green, and I think it was just a great place to show as many paintings sort of hung salon style, that is up the wall and mm-hmm. stacked maybe two or three or even four high. So there was this great concentration of work. And that went away. Gallery 10 went away. But what's interesting is that we've created a gallery called Traditions, where we've tried to set out what it was in the Renaissance and the Baroque era that art was about. And in fact, the gallery has ended up looking a little bit like, or quite a bit like, the old Gallery 10. So I think people will find
it's
that experience.
Purple now.
But it's purple. It's not green.
No, it's not purple. It's aubergine.
It's sort of aubergine.
It's a fancy name for
it.
Of course, it's a museum.
We're art people. Yeah. We can't say purple. Aubergine.
Yeah, but actually, it's worked beautifully with some of the paintings. I think our Gentileschi, which is a masterpiece in and of itself, it just looks better on the purple than it has ever looked.
How do you even begin to pick colors for walls in a museum? Or is it something you change often necessarily? Or
we've got a great exhibition designer, Greg Jones, and he's been doing it for years. But it's a discussion, I think. We look at a sample and we say, it's got too much yellow in it, or it's too green. And really, what may seem sort of like a decorator-ish kind of idea is really extremely important, because it can truly make a work of art or break a work of art. So.
And actually, there are lots of different whites. Everybody would think, you know, just a gallery that's white is white. A white gallery is, you really have to fool with your whites, you know,
right.
Warm, not too cool, a whole thing with that. So
you're the zookeeper. You do you pick it out? Do you lay it out? Do you?
That's largely what the curators do. And I guess in the old days, if you will, pretty much the curators did it by themselves and with the director's final approval. But what makes this reinstallation so great, I think, is that we brought a lot of voices to the table, a lot of ideas, and that included the education department. So about 18 months ago, we started having meetings, and very regular, intense meetings, to decide how the collection was going to look, what each gallery space would be. And it was a great process. It was a really exciting one.
So, and each gallery is devoted to a big idea or to a major artist. So there's Monet and Friends, there's Picasso in the modern world. So, and then everything in that gallery tries to come together to reinforce the big idea. So why is Picasso important? What did he do?
It's not just his paintings and drawings, then.
That's right.
More to it than that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, all of us know that name. We're like, oh, yeah, I know that name. But why do I know that name? What's important? So it's either a big idea or a big artist. We have a Bellows Room. It'd almost be, you know, a sin not to have a Bellows Room at the Columbus Museum of Art. So we have Bellows and the American Experience. But I think the one that's going to surprise people the most, the two I think that will surprise people, one is called Love and War, where the curators brought together and the educators brought together works of art from many different time periods. And half the room is war and half the room is love. And every room has something we call connectors, which are ways to get involved with the works of art. Sometimes they're books. Sometimes they're activities. The one in the Love and War room is the most ambitious. It's a little – you kind of go – we built out a wall so you can kind of go into this little space where you will record your love story. You'll video your love story. And at the end, it's on the love side, needless to say. And it's we're going to call it the Love Shack, great popular culture reference. You go into the Love Shack, and after you're done, you can hit the delete button because you hated the way your hair looked or you just didn't want to share this. Or you can kind of hit a button so you can archive it and then download it from home. Or you can share it, and we're going to have actually a video screen in the room, in the gallery, so you can hear people's love stories. And I think that's a really neat way to get involved. I mean, for some people, it'll be really fun. For other people, like, oh, I'm not going to do that. So it's, you know, doing what you want to do in terms of getting engaged. On the war side, we've decided to put out
spears and guns.
Well, we thought about that. We were going to share war stories, and we think maybe not right now, but we're going to have Battleship and Stratego, old vintage board games. There'll be new versions of the old vintage board games to play. We've had great success in using games as a way to get people to slow down and engage. You know, what the average length of time someone normally spends at an individual gallery is?
No.
2 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah. So if our goal is to get you to slow down, we got to give you activities like a game, or we've had great success. I mean, we have things like cell phone tours, which are hugely popular, but we also have jigsaw puzzles of the work of art. And we've seen whole families sit down. We've tested a lot of these things and watched these, you know, families put together a puzzle, and they're looking at the work of art. They're doing the puzzle, looking at the work of art, and they stay for much longer. And because the education department really, they've done a lot of different things with us, but I have to tell you that it was their idea to banish the benches. Cindy, yep. Talk about banishing benches.
Well,
let's take a break.
Sure.
And I definitely want to come back
banishing
to that,
benches.
Banishing the benches. I want to talk about all this stuff. This is interesting. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher today. For the best in classical music and your favorite local hosts, tune to Classical 101 for WOSU Public Media's brand new radio service. Classical 101 brings you the music you want to hear 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. You are always going to hear something wonderful on Classical 101. From Bach to Beethoven, from ProMusica to the Columbus Symphony, Classical 101 is your source for the best in classical music.
Support for WOSU comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
It's 23 degrees in downtown Columbus. Some sunshine today, a high of 28. A chance of a little snow overnight, cloudy skies, and a low of 22. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about all the new things going on at the Columbus Museum of Art. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, you can go onto the Facebook page. You can Twitter me at Ann Fisher, WOSU. My guests, Nanette Macy-June, she's executive director of the Columbus Museum of Art. Also, we have curator Dominique Vasseur and director of education, Cindy Myers Foley. If you want to learn about the changes and what's on schedule for 2011, give us a call if you have any questions, 614-292-8513. Now, when we stopped off last time, you were just going to bring up the benches. And, of course, if anyone knows me, they know I chattered all the way through our break about this. But let's go, you know, go backwards, Cindy, and tell us about what's the issue with the benches and that, no, you're not getting rid of seating.
Right. Okay. Absolutely. It was funny. We were all having conversations about what the new museum, the new gallery should look like. One of our educators, Marilee Mostov, brought us into a meeting in which she forced us for the entire hour meeting to stand. And her point was, we're asking a lot of our visitors. We're asking them to take away all these messages and make meaning, but we're also asking them to do it standing. And we were quite challenged by that hour meeting. And I think it made us have a really thoughtful conversation about comfortable seating. And what you're going to find at the museum is lots of couches and seating areas.
Let me just interrupt you. Say, I always assumed that the lack of seating or the uncomfortable seating in any museum was because you didn't want us. You didn't want us to linger, that you wanted to move us along. That you, when you mentioned two minutes in each gallery, it's just the whole concept. I mean, the idea is how long can you stay in a gallery now that I think about it?
And I think for the most part, traditionally in art museums, we didn't think about it at all.
Yeah, that's what I wondered.
We just didn't think about it. And we thought about everybody standing in front of an individual work of art, admiring it. And we want people to do that. But you also want people just to enjoy themselves and have an opportunity to sit and linger. We actually tested seating in the hall last summer and had people vote on what was comfortable, what kind of seating worked for them. So we solicited advice last summer.
Okay, so Cindy.
Yeah, well, and I think what's great is we know that people, meaning and memories are made at museums. So people, they have wonderful experiences with their families or their social group, but they can't do that if they don't have a space to share ideas and laugh together and engage. And so what we've tried to do is just make room for that to happen.
Yeah, over the summer we had we still have it up in Fur, Fins, and Feathers, which is our exhibition that we specifically designed for our school partners this year. But there's duck checkers in that, and we've had endless people to sit down and play the little ducky, rubber ducky checkers and have a fantastic experience. And that's what we're after. So
614-292-8513 if you want to give us a call. You know, just the name museum suggests something sort of stodgy and off-putting to people.
It smells like your grandma's attic.
Well, I mean, you know, semantics are a big part of what defines us and that sort of a thing. What is there any alternative? Or does anything seem trite and that you'd be trying too hard to change something like that?
That's a good question. We didn't think to do that. I think because we are part of a broader world. I mean, I always talk about living in two worlds. The museum lives in the world of Central Ohio and our public that we serve. And then we also live in something called the broader art world. And that world has different – expects and needs different things from us than our own community. So you've got to live in both worlds so that we can serve our community. And the art world is a wonderfully strange place. But museum seems to be the right word for us. But we did change our mission statement a few years ago. We used to have a mission statement about it was a paragraph long. I could never remember it. So we changed it to the museum is about creating great experiences with great art for everyone. And we live that mission every day. And then we use as our tagline, Art Speaks, Join the Conversation. So you'll hear us talk a lot about conversation as a way to sort of break down that museum word. Because you're right, I think that museum word is a little bit, more than a little bit off-putting for people.
You know, yeah. Hopefully, I was just going to say, hopefully with museums like Columbus doing what we're doing, making really opening ourselves up to having these great experiences and family experiences and spending time. Maybe the term museum will eventually change, and it won't be stodgy. I mean, maybe you know we're actually going to be able to change what a museum means to people.
Another aspect of what you were just talking about too is that besides the moving through the galleries quickly because there's no place to sit and relax, is the idea that it's supposed to be like a library and you're not supposed to talk.
You're supposed to whisper.
Yeah, there's that feeling sometimes when you go into museums that you're not supposed to stand out.
But it's the exact opposite. Yeah, what we're really trying to tell people is that through conversation and laughter and engagement, that's where the meaning is made. That's where you become a friend with that work of art. That's where you and a colleague can exchange new ideas together. But it's only through the conversation with that work of art that happens. So,
and our individual artworks are very much like people, in the sense that you know some of them make you laugh, some of them make you sad, some make you think, some you really like, others
some
you find really quirky and weird, and you don't understand
right.
them. And a short time is okay. I mean, so I think that if you think about it, it's kind of if you really think about it as a relationship. Different works of art bring different things to the table, and there's a whole myriad of experiences that you can have. But everybody wants to know the backstory. They want to know the inside scoop, the backstory of what that work of art has to say.
And you're giving a lot more of that out now.
We are. In fact, we have a gallery called Stories and Secrets.
Mm-hmm. So what's that about?
Well, it's just about that. It's trying to describe who we are, sort of a little bit of our history, but then really telling people some of the amazing things about works of art that otherwise you wouldn't know, that our Edward Hopper painting is one of the most requested works of art in the museum, that we have
so
works,
we've lent it to
with the woman at the counter
and the bed.
We're the one with the woman
okay,
on the bed.
Gotcha, okay.
And it's been around the world more times than
any of us will ever go.
We'll travel.
And the Kehinde Wiley painting, that it was actually from a commissioned series of works that the Columbus Museum of Art commissioned in 2006, a really exciting venture with a very hot young artist who's just riding the crest of fame and fortune now, and we were right there with him. So these interesting moments of who we are and what we're about and things that people, I think, will really enjoy, those backstories.
Yeah, there's one single painting that became two paintings.
Yeah.
We split it in half and made two paintings out of it.
Paul Klee, yes. It used to be two paintings on either side of a composition board. And when it came into the collection in 1991, we had a conservator very skillfully scalpel the board in two.
Wow.
So now we can show both sides of the paintings. So that's...
And there's also there's a wonderful Rockwell Kent. No one would ever think that Rockwell Kent would be the most scandalous artist in the collection. But there's a painting called Men and Mountains, which is the song, the title's from a William Blake poem. Is it Blake, I think?
I think so.
And but it's – It was shown in 1911, 1912 in the museum, but it was so scandalous that it had to hang behind a curtain for men only. So now, you know, troops of school children go by it and don't are totally okay. But it's we're telling you that story. So those sorts of behind-the-scenes stories about works, that makes them come alive. That makes you connect to them.
614-292-8513 if you want to give us a call, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about the renovations and the changes at the Columbus Museum of Art. It will be opening up for the public on New Year's Day.
10 o'clock in the morning. If you don't stay up late, or you have a really bad headache,
you never
and you
go to sleep.
You can't sleep, or you never went to sleep, you can come down at 10 o'clock in the morning. We're going to cut the ribbon. We're going to have hot chocolate on the lawn, and we're going to cut the ribbon. And then a whole day of activities, free for the public, all kinds of activities and music and food. And the great football game of the day doesn't come on until 6 o'clock, so you got to do something with your New Year's Day.
Now, when I read about this last spring, I think you were saying January or February. It looks like things went your way time-wise.
We here would say that our chief designer, Greg Jones, would say it should have been February. I don't think he slept for weeks and weeks, but we're going to be ready. We may be still tweaking some things, but we'll be there. We'll be ready.
What do you think it will be like in, say, 25 years? So is this – I'm trying to figure out, is this something that the way it's going to be for a long, long time, just like the way it was for a long, long time, or has it been – rethought and recreated to change more often. Does that make sense?
Well, I think that's a great question. I think that, you know, it's almost generationally that you reimagine and reinvent an organization sort of on a generational basis. I think this is a generation coming of age that wants more choice in how they engage and what they do. And so I think what you'll see is a museum museums that continue to really engage their audiences in what they want. I mean, we still use a lot of art history at the museum, but the truth is, I'm sure you're shocked, Anne, very few people want to become art historians. I love being an art historian. But
that's the backstory.
That I think
is interesting.
But people want to have a conversation about where they're starting the conversation. They want to start the conversation. We're an informal learning environment.
Yes.
And there was a very interesting expert on informal learning environments, John Falk, that came to visit, just written another book on the subject, how people engage in museums. And he actually said to me, I know you think you're the main thing, Nanette, but I think you would be wise to think of yourself as the stage set. And I said, what? No, I'm the thing. And he said, well, you're really the stage set for how people want to use you to create their own narratives. Mm-hmm. And he said, and then the next thing you need to realize is that when people come to the museum, what that narrative is, what they want to be doing with you, depends on who they come with. If they come alone, they may want to just kind of quietly walk through, kind of be meditative and think things as they look at works of art. If they come with their kids, they want a whole different experience. If they come with their colleagues, they want something else. If they come with their best friends, or if they want, you know, each one of these narratives is that person or those visitors creating that narrative on the stage set that you create. So I think one of the things museums got to learn to do is, all museums, is to let go a little bit. We present things, but then we let you complete it. We let you do. That's new for museums. We tend to be a little more controlling. I think you're going to see an entire 25 years of loosening up in that sense, letting go a little bit, letting you create the storyline with us, co-create the content with us, rather than us just telling you what you need to
and
know.
And I think being able to respond to what the community is saying and doing and needing. It's like the libraries when the job market, you know, was crashing and people were being laid off, they immediately went to providing workshops on resume. And I think actually museums are moving that direction as well, that we need to be – I mean, we may not do the resume building, but we will do different types of workshops, and we'll address what our community needs and wants from us, and it's up to us to listen to them. So.
The idea of creativity and having people be creative, it can be daunting to a lot of people when they do visit a museum and they look at something like, Dominic, what you curate. I mean, you select these amazing pieces of art, these amazing works of art, and it can be intimidating. So how do you go from that intimidation factor to this is something that it should inspire you to create as well? Does that go into your what you're thinking about
yeah.
when you're...
Yeah, I think so. I mean, clearly the work of art, the way it's installed in a gallery, the works of art that are installed around it, the choice of color for the walls, the way it's lit, the way it's framed, you know, those are sort of very basics for a museum. But then going on to what is the voice that's used and how a label is written? You know, is the label 5 paragraphs long and in type size that's so small that you know you need a magnifying glass, or is mm-hmm. it fairly easy to read? Is it in a friendly voice? Is it good information, but that it's right there up front? Layering meaning, having books and good seating in the gallery. Those are all things that we've been talking about that make the experience much less sort of like you're just sort of wandering through on a conveyor belt, getting brief glimpses, but that you're really encouraged to prolong the experience, to really have a deeper experience and create those conversations that, you know, Nanette was talking about.
Yeah, and we were chosen – we're very proud of this. I have to tell you this. We were chosen – Lincoln Center hosted something called the Imagination Conversation in New York City, in which they drew people. They had it was a panel discussion, and they had invited guests, like an auditorium of people to come. And it was people from different walks of life, different disciplines, talking about creativity and imagination. And they then challenged all the states to have one. Everyone should have one in their state. And Columbus Museum of Art was chosen to host the one for the state of Ohio. And to sort of kind of connect people with their own creativity, we actually had a creativity summit that Cindy organized, and we had a great time with Artie Isaac, but it
right,
all
sure.
kind of built up to this imagination conversation. And that's what, who was in the room? It wasn't just artists, but we had the head of innovation, the director of innovation for the Cleveland Clinic. We had you know all the list.
Yeah, we had Dr. Tim Barra, who is a scientist from OSU who does research on fish, and we had from Project Runway Althea Harper. All of these folks have a connection to Ohio. This is their
all
home
of
base.
Them, you weren't allowed to import.
Althea
them.
Was one of the
contestants. She
right.
was. She's gotten the furthest on the show.
I remember.
I loved her.
Yeah, I loved her too. They she bumped her off too soon.
No kidding.
And she grew up in Daly.
You're out there listening, Althea.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
And Antoine Fisher, who of course grew up in Cleveland, very very modest circumstances, and now is a world renowned producer, screenwriter, and professor.
And subject of the movie of the same name.
With Denzel Washington. So, I mean, we – all of these – and then we had Michael Weiss was our creative CEO. Do we miss anybody?
Just Chris Coburn's name.
Oh, Chris.
Yeah, he was from
Chris Coburn, who was
Cleveland
from
Clinic.
Cleveland Clinic. And the only non-Ohio guy was – we had Steve Steidel from Harvard did the moderating of the panel. But the whole point was – we've got to stop thinking of creativity as other, as something that somebody else does, and see that it's a continuum. Okay, I'm never going to paint like Picasso or Rembrandt or anybody, but creativity is part of my human DNA. And mm-hmm. what's my part in that? And how does it change the way we think and the way our culture solves problems? Dr. Barra being able to make fish interesting was an amazing. The whole audience was just
laughing.
Was just completely engaged. It's an incredible journey to take people on.
We have to take another break right now. In this journey, we'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Time is running out for you to make your 2010 tax-deductible contribution to public radio. Your support helps ensure that WOSU will continue to serve Central Ohio listeners in 2011. It's simple to make your pledge by December 31st. Give online at WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. Your contribution has never been more important for the future of public radio. Thank you for supporting WOSU this year.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News in 20 minutes at 11. Hour 2 of All Sides begins, and we'll hear about a spectacular lunar eclipse coinciding with the winter solstice as we explore backyard astronomy with Ohio Wesleyan University's Perkins Observatory Director Tom Burns. Join us in 20 minutes at 11 for that hour of All Sides. It's 23 degrees in downtown Columbus, partly sunny skies today and a high of 28. A chance of a little snow overnight, cloudy skies, a low of 22. Some snow and sleet for Tuesday morning and then rain mixing with snow in the afternoon and a high of 34 degrees for tomorrow. And a slight chance of a little rain-snow mix Tuesday night, a low of 27. Be sure to listen to WOSU Public Media's new radio service, Classical 101. Start your day with Boyce Lancaster beginning at 6 a.m. It's classical music 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, on Classical 101. And All Sides continues on WOSU 820.
Welcome back to All Sides. My guests, Nanette Macy-Junes, she's executive director of the Columbus Museum of Art. Also, Dominique Vasseur, he is curator of European art at the Columbus Museum of Art. And Cindy Myers Foley, she is director of education at the Columbus Museum of Art. If you have any questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Anne, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Unfortunately, I have been in and out listening to the program, so I hope I'm not repeating something that was said. But
no problem.
I have worked as served as an artist in schools for 26 years, and I've also been teaching adults all over the state in what I do, which is hand lettering. But I have preached as long as and as loud as I can that the distinction between art and science, the wall that society sets up between the two, is a false one and, in fact, a dangerous one, and that there is science in art and art in science, and it's all based, you know, it's all the common denominator is creativity and what you do with it. So, you know, there is science in what I do. I have to use math. I have to use chemistry. I have to, you know, use all of those things, and so that people who are afraid of science may not think it's relevant to art, but it is. It's extremely relevant if you're going to be in control of your process. So just want to underline and applaud what you're doing in the museum in terms of people seeing creative effects of or seeing science in art and so forth.
Thank you, Anne, for your call.
You're welcome.
We had a fun show a couple months ago with Lonnie Thompson and from OSU on the climatologist, and he was involved in a project where they're going to Antarctic and with an artist. Actually, it was the artist. I can't remember his name right now, but that's where that kind of broke through that wall for me, is the connection between them and how it can inspire.
Well, and if you look, if you got the July issue of Newsweek, on the front cover it said creativity crisis, and it really talked about the fact that creativity scores in the U.S. are, while, you know, for decades have been increasing 10 points every year like IQ test scores have been, and since 1990 they've really been plummeting.
Really?
And I think a lot of people want to blame it on, you know, everything from testing in our schools, TV, yes, you name it. And I think all of us are to blame to a degree. But now I think all of us are need to take a role in changing this. And scientists and artists have to work together.
It's interesting because we used to compare and contrast ourselves to, say, the Japanese, who are very, very good at teaching their kids one way. And we always said, well, we're more independent thinkers. We're more artistic. We're more creative. But now we're going the way of rote testing, now or rote study and rote testing. And we're putting much more emphasis on testing. And the contributions to the arts and arts education in schools, from music to, you know, drawing class, have decreased.
And even the arts education programs in schools have been affected by a lot of these policies and,
right.
and the direction. They're really, in some ways, handicapped by what they have to do.
If they do have arts education.
If they have arts education. And I think that puts even more pressure on an informal learning environment, informal arts learning environment that really believes in this power of creativity to really get out there and champion creativity, but also focus on the ways we can all begin cultivating it.
And, you know, and we have a new program at the museum for preschools. We've always had preschool age programs, mm-hmm. but we kind of actually Cindy woke us up and said, most of our preschoolers are actually in school. We need to be working with the preschools. And the first we have is a summer program. We use actually college interns to work with the preschools and the students. And they just love working. The little ones looking with their mouths kind of drop open when they see this, you know, big, you know, 19, 20-year-old young man or young woman right. working with them. A lot of them are young men, and they are particularly awestruck by the young men. But what's amazing is to watch. I mean, you would think it would be hard to get, you know, small children involved in looking at a work of art. You think, oh, they must bring them down and they just draw. We do a lot of drawing and things like that. But there's an activity where they actually look at a work of art and try to use their imagination and to really look and see and articulate what they see. And they, I saw them one morning and they were all sitting in front of this big 19th century landscape. It's a very kind of dark wooded landscape by Corot. It's not one of the most, in terms of just, it's not one of the most exciting works if you're not real. Okay, Dominique is looking glaring at me. It's not one of the most exciting
fabulous,
works. You would
right?
think for five year olds.
Yeah.
For 4 year olds. I mean, this is meant for 4 year olds, for little ones, for little 3 and 4 year olds. But actually, all of these kids were completely engaged and they passed out they had a basket and they passed out different objects in the basket and there were fish and birds and all mm-hmm. kinds of things. And each child had to say where they were going to put their object in the painting and why. I mean, you could say something absolutely outrageous as long as you said why. But they were all just completely, you know, looking and trying to figure out what they were going to say and what they were going to do. And it was pretty amazing to see a bunch of 3 and 4 year olds that engaged and using their brains, using that, well, that ability
to
imagine.
Kids that age are always engaged. It's just in what?
Right.
But if
we're
you give them that option,
yeah.
that's a new one.
Yeah, but we're finding that a lot of preschoolers aren't actually. They're being trained to begin reading,
well,
and they're moving actually further away from that imaginative capacity,
right.
the capacity to think of what is not yet,
yeah.
what's going to happen next in that work of art, what could be the next thing, and many of them, and I think it's because parents are trying to do the right thing. They're pushing a lot more linear thinking.
Yeah, Cindy's is working around something that I think we could say, but we actually had a very wonderful preschool, but it was not very high, and this was not. We work a lot with Head Start. People probably say, "Oh, that was the, you know, other children that haven't had opportunities." But I got to tell you, we had a high end preschool kids, and a couple of them said the kids said to us, "You asked them to imagine something, and they said that would be lying." So something's gone amiss in the way we're doing some things because we
wow.
there is something about truth yeah. and lying. And as I'm a parent, I remember wanting my child to understand the difference between truth and lying. But that's not the same as imagination. So we really need to find ways to get our children thinking out of the box because it's what we need as a culture.
614-292-8513. You can email us in at allsides@wosu.org. I'll get to an email in a second, but right now we have Annette. Annette, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I just called in to let the people at the museum know I attended the Creativity Summit, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and thank you for having it. And I was pleased yesterday to read in the dispatch about the free activity you have coming up on New Year's Day. And I'm
great.
Thinking of just sharing that with people and say, meet me at the museum.
Ah, meet me at the museum.
That is great.
That's a great tagline, I think. A new motto.
Yeah, take it.
Meet me at the museum. Annette, did you learn anything about creativity that day?
Well, I can't say that I learned anything, but my horizons were expanded. I truly enjoyed Artie Isaacs, and then there was a speaker, maybe it was Artie, I don't remember who said it, but they encouraged us to write 4 pages a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought,
I think that's Artie.
Yeah,
that must be Artie.
That's Artie, isn't it, Artie? I know you're out there, Artie.
With a small book, you know, I can do that. And so I've been writing more and just thinking more about what is creativity. And I think we've been kind of centered in our definition mm-hmm. of what that is. So thank you very much for having that. It was a truly good investment of my time and resources.
Thanks for joining us.
All right. Have a great day.
Thanks, Annette. Take care. Bye-bye.
I like that word stunted. I think that is it is that we've sort of stunted our idea of what creativity is, and we need to broaden our horizons. I like that.
We have an email from Sarah. I love the work of Amina Robinson and love seeing her pieces at the museum. How is she showcased in the newly renovated building?
In the newly renovated building, there is going to be two opportunities to see Amina. The one that you'll notice right away on January 1st is in the Bellows and the American Experience Gallery. We have it's a very large scale, three-dimensional sculpture by Amina of the E.E. Ward, which, you know, the Ward Movie Company is still with us, but its origins were in transporting escaped slaves. And it's this wonderful piece. It's large scale. It was actually given to us by Chase. It was in their collection in New York. And when Bank One became Chase and they changed all the names, they did a gift to the museum of bringing that work home. And then perhaps not on January 1, but very soon after, there'll be an installation as part of the Center for Creativity. We have something called the Forum Gallery. It's a meeting space, but also is a gallery, and it will have feature works by Ohio artists, and Amina will be in there. There's one section of it that the lights didn't come in yet. So
I know Amina's super famous and fabulous and well-known everywhere. And you're going to have Ohio artists showcased, like you mentioned. But what about local artists? And is there a relationship there that you have been building on and working with? Because everyone wants to get their piece in a museum someday, so you don't want to.
Well, actually,
how do you develop those relationships without giving up?
One of the Ohio artists means that it will also include Central Ohio artists. But one of the exciting things is that the museum is now going to be the host of the GCAC Awards, the Artist Awards annually. And so we'll be the ones that show that work. So I think, in fact, it starts this spring.
GCAC.
So the GCAC Fellowship Awards, okay. The winners will be exhibited at the museum. So that's one thing we're working on. So I think there's lots of new ways that we can stay engaged with local artists.
614-292-8513. And Lisa, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks.
You bet.
I just wanted to say that in listening to the conversation, especially as you talked about your preschool programs, I think it's so impressive that, you know, you're taking the time to help the kids learn to use words, to identify their feelings and thoughts about creativity and imagination and art. And I think, you know, sometimes it can be intimidating to people to not understand the symbolism or whatever. But through those, you know, starting young with programs like that and then the interactive activities in the galleries, I think that'll help overcome a lot of that hurdle. So,
Lisa, you're so right. Every day we get up at the museum and we try to make it a little less intimidating every day, because it really is a hurdle for a lot of people, particularly. And, you know, the truth is, if you never walked into a museum until you're 18 years old, it's so much harder for us to get you comfortable. But if you grew up at the museum and, you know, you came and went lots of times as a kid, it's like, oh, yeah, I can deal with that, you know? So you're right.
Well, that's great. I've got two little kids, and I think we'll try to be there on first.
And you're going to love the Wonder Room.
Yeah.
Good. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Lisa.
Bye-bye.
614-292-8513. Bill, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Bill.
Hello.
Hi.
Are you're talking to me.
Hmm? I am. We are.
I wanted to say that my five children and five grandchildren all love museums, so that's not a stodgy word for our family. But another thing I wanted to say was in 1965, one of the editors of Look magazine wrote a book, and I think it was called Education and Ecstasy, and he started the book by saying, by fourth grade, we've beaten all the creativity out of children. So I just thought that might fit in the conversation there, and that you might be able to use that quotation from somewhere.
We did, and we wrote down the title of the book because we're going to go look it up, because I think that is what we're worried about too.
Well, it always worried me, and I taught education at Ohio State, and it always worried me, not just the creativity, but we fell far short of what children were capable of doing, and never really got that out except among exceptional teachers and exceptional schools.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't matter what socioeconomic class the school was from. I found some very creative schools in the inner city schools. So I just wanted to pass that along to you and say Merry Christmas to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Bill. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
We have time for one more call before we shut this baby down. And Sheila, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sheila. Is that me?
Yeah, it's you.
Hi. I'm just thrilled to hear this. Actually, I'm a retired teacher, but this is 10 years ago we were doing this in our classroom. We actually were in service, and we did this type of thing. We brought in art and had, you know, students do we discussed it. They did journal writing on it. And then every morning we would have start their day with they had sketch pads, and they were given objects. You know, let's say we would have a fern on every little group of tables, and or just various objects, whatever, just for free type of expression of art of their own. And my concern, though, is this. I think we're losing a lot of that creativity in children because of performance-based testing. Mm-hmm. My concern is, you know, this seems to be at odds. I think that's squelching a lot of creativity in, and not just mm-hmm. the area of art, but...
Let's hear what they have to say, Sheila. We have to go in just a sec, so I want to give Cindy a chance to respond.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sheila.
Thank you very much.
Well, and we're in total agreement, and that's one of the reasons we're working with Columbus City Schools. We have two workshops with not only the art teachers, but we're doing with classroom teachers as well, to look at how do we look at those standards and yet infuse a creative learning environment. And teachers want to. They know it's the way to go. And I think the museum, our role is to help them find the mechanisms to do that with the guidelines and standards as they are.
We have to go. I want to thank my guests. Nanette Macy-Junes, she is Executive Director of the Columbus Museum of Art. Nanette, thanks for joining us again.
Oh, and thanks for having us.
Nice to see you. And Cindy Myers-Foley, she is Director of Education there. Cindy, thanks for joining us today.
I loved it. Thank you.
And also Dominic Bessour, he is the curator for,
European
Art. Thanks for joining us.
Thank
Appreciate
you,
it. For more information, you can go to WOSU.org, and we will / All Sides, and we'll have that website for you there so you can link to the Columbus Museum of Art that way. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.